Hi, it's Connor Svensson here, founder and CEO of Web3 Labs. This is a conversation I had with Ben Edgington, ETH2 researcher and product owner for Taku at Consensus. Ben comes from a very technical background, having started his career working on supercomputers at Hitachi, where he worked for 2 decades before he got sucked into the blockchain vortex and joined Consensus in 2017. In our conversation, we cover a lot of ground on Ethereum and its transition off proof of work to proof of stake, which is something he's very involved in and has seen firsthand how it's evolved during the past 3 years. Ben's a very well-known figure in the ETH2 community, and if you have an interest in keeping up with this fast-moving space, I highly recommend you check out his newsletter, What's New in ETH2, which is available at eth2.news. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did. Hey, Ben, it's great to have you here.
Connor, it's wonderful to appear on your podcast. I've enjoyed listening to a few episodes, and I'm amazed to be here.
Well, thank you. And you've started to do a fair bit of podcasting yourself as well in the last year, I guess.
Yeah, we had this thing going with CoinDesk, which was nice. We had about a 9-month run, but then my co-host moved on from CoinDesk and we didn't pick it up again. So, you know, if there's a podcast slot open, I would gladly fill it. Yeah. So this is, that was a good experience. Enjoyed doing that. I'll tell you what though, Connor, it's exhausting having to have an opinion on every topic. Mm-hmm. I'm usually kind of like, yeah, whatever for most things. But, if you've got to appear and talk about something, you need an opinion. So I found that, prepping for the podcast week by week and trying to work out what do I really think about this was quite an interesting process.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing though, no doubt you do have like a very significant opinion on, or at least awareness of, is the ETH2 ecosystem. But rewinding before that, you were at Hitachi for just shy of 20 years until roughly four years ago. And what was it that made you jump from that world into blockchain? Because you've gone really, really deep in terms of what you've been doing, and we'll of course get onto that a bit more detail shortly. But it's like you've worked in this very large corporate for so many years. There must have been something pretty exciting that really sucked you in.
Yeah, that's right down the rabbit hole now. So I started my time at Hitachi doing very technical things. I spent about 8 years working on supercomputers, doing very low-level optimizations, as well as parallelization of code and lots of kind of computer science-y type of things. So I'd come out of academia to do that. Hitachi pulled out of the supercomputer business in Europe, and I kind of fell into generic techie sort of role, doing all sorts of things like data center infrastructure and cooling. I worked on IPv6 routers for a while, biometric stuff, bunch of fintech security, just loads of random things. And, as is the way, sort of drifted into management and then ended up sort of moderately senior. So my job title was head of engineering for one division of Hitachi Europe. And we were mostly doing fintech stuff, so mostly working with banks in the City of London and across Europe, biometrics and other security software. And it was a kind of quiet life, really. Could quite happily have driven my desk for another 10 years and retired, retired well. Around the beginning of 2016, all the sort of salespeople were coming back and reporting, all our clients want to talk about is something called blockchain. Can you find out what it is? They were talking to the banks, and it was hot at that time. So I did a bit of digging, came across Bitcoin. I thought interesting, but not that interesting. Read up on Ethereum and was just blown away. This captured me. It was entranced me. And just started spending evenings, weekends, every spare hour, just reading everything on Ethereum, learning everything about Ethereum, hacking around with smart contracts, and just generally learning, reading the yellow paper and learning from the bottom up. Eventually I got the opportunity to make that a full-time job. I realized I was board of management wasn't for me. I needed that. What excited me was doing the hands-on techie stuff. And in the day job just didn't give me that opportunity anymore. So So 4 years ago, as you say, I joined Consensus, and no regrets. It's been an incredible journey.
Yeah, and so much has happened in that time. Going back to Ethereum specifically, though, what would you say was the thing that pulled you in? Was it the technology or the community or combination of both? Because there was, they were the first, second generation blockchain. But I think, from my own personal perspective, I've always saw the parallels with the Ethereum community as the Linux community, but without the benevolent dictator. But I'd love to hear your thoughts there.
Yeah. Community is super important. And I made my first sort of tentative steps, a couple of PRs to the Solidity compiler. And they were so nice to me and so welcoming that I immediately felt, part of that world. And that was great. Technology was fascinating. What I liked about it was all about computing in a resource constrained environment. Which is what I'd done on supercomputers. You don't think of supercomputers as resource constrained, but it is. If you can speed up your code by 10%, you can save a couple of $1 million of hardware. And so there's a lot of pressure to make them perform really fast. So all the same things about memory constraints and micro optimizations were happening on the EVM. But what really captured me was the drama. I was getting interested in this through the DAO hack thing. I mean, the DAO itself was fascinating, and then the hack, and the adventure that was, and the drama around it just kind of hooked me completely, and dragged me in. So it's a combination of all of that, and it is a bit like living in a soap opera sometimes. But it keeps me engaged. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember going along to a Ethereum meetup back in Sydney a few weeks literally before the DAO hack happened, and the person there was talking about how this incredible thing's been written in so few lines of code, and it's basically like an automated investment vehicle. And we know what happened then.
I never invested in the DAO, basically because I didn't really get it. I like to understand what I'm getting involved with. I don't like to ape into things, to my detriment, it turns out. But I dodged a bullet on that one. But it was fascinating.
Yeah, and so certainly with the NFT market now as well. Yeah, that definitely doesn't make too much sense there either in certain respects, but there's some people who really do get it out there.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating how it's all evolved over the past 4 years. I reckon that when I first got interested in Ethereum, you could pretty much keep up with everything that was happening by spending a couple of hours a day on Reddit. And then you were across almost everything that was going on. Nowadays, it's impossible, completely impossible to keep up. There's DeFi, there's NFTs, there's a whole host of stuff at the protocol level, which I try and that's my niche, to try and document some of that. And never mind all the other chains, the roll-ups, the side chains, and everything happening there. And then you've got the regulatory stuff, and it just goes on and on. So one of the things I've had to do over the past few years rather rapidly is kind of close down my areas of interest. I used to try and know everything, and now I know a lot about very little.
But that very little is very significant, given everything that's happening with Ethereum. And I don't know if it's not really correct to call it the transition to ETH2, so to speak. I guess it's the whole merge, as it's being referred to. But you, when you started at Consensus, you were within the protocols division, and then I think it was roughly a year after you started there, you began putting out What's New in ETH2, which was like a newsletter. And as you said, there was so much information, and it was so hard to keep up with it all even back then. You just wanted to start, sharing some of what was happening in the wider community. So when did you start working on, move across to that sort of ETH2 bit? Mm-hmm. So it was obviously before you started writing the newsletter.
Yeah, it's interesting sort of history. So I landed in Pegasus, which is a protocol engineering group of Consensus. It was quite small at the time. I was about number 12 or 13 through the door. We're now 70 plus people. And I first started working on enterprise Ethereum stuff because, you know, with the corporate background and the fintech clients, that kind of made sense. But it just felt too much like doing what I was doing before. And it wasn't the passion that had driven me in, which was much more about the open, permissionless mainnet world. So I, with the permission of Pegasus, which was very generous, I moved over to really to kind of pioneer Pegasus's mainnet work there. At the time, Consensus had no relationship with the Ethereum Foundation for sort of historical reasons. And somehow I found myself on a call with Joe Lubin and Vitalik. I think it might have been just the three of us somewhere in January 17 or December 17 or January 18, somewhere around there. And Vitalik was saying, okay, we need some help. We need some protocol research. And it just felt really right, really opportune. So I, from then on, I devoted myself to sort of building Pegasus R&D, built it up from a couple of people up to 20 plus now. And a lot of that work was around Ethereum protocol research, mainnet stuff, as well as some enterprise stuff. So a year into that, did various workshops. There was a workshop in Taipei on sharding, which is great. And then we sort of scoped out what Ethereum 2 would look like in July in Berlin of 2018. And late that year, around September, October time, I kicked off the project, which became known as Teku, which is our Ethereum 2 client. And it was a research project at that time. We didn't have a goal to make it a mainnet production client. It was really part of our being involved in Ethereum protocol research. And having a seat at the table, we were writing the code. So I managed to get a team together. Joe was a great help in moving people around, and that was worked out really well. And we built this thing. And after about a year, so we're up to late 2019, we sort of looked at what was there and thought, actually, you know, this is okay. This has got promise. It's more than a prototype or a research project. This has got potential to become a mainnet client. So we did we have a decision-making process in Pegasus called SPADE. I can't remember what it stands for, but it involves a lot of consultation with just about everybody. So we did an exercise. Rob Dawson, who's now CTO in Consensus, led that, and we gave it the green light. We gave Teku. It was called Artemis at the time. We had to change that for the usual tedious reasons, yeah. But it's now Teku. And we transitioned that to product development. So we're now a product team, and I'm product manager for Teku, which is a mainnet ETH2 client or beacon chain client or consensus client, whatever terminology you prefer to use.
In terms of like how the space has evolved as well there, I mean, certainly, you know, originally with this whole migration with Ethereum going from proof of work to proof of stake, it was viewed as being a number of phases that need to happen, with phase zero being the beacon chain launch, which happened last December, and then this notion of sharding, and then the actual, you know, application level layer cutover, so to speak. But that's all got sort of ripped up in the last 12 months. And so I get presumably there's a lot of specifics into why that happened that you could tell the listeners about, why there was such a, you know, sudden change there, and, you know, why we're in the trajectory we are now.
One of the things I enjoy doing is stepping back a bit and sort of comparing the world I'm in now with the world that I was in when I was working for a massive Japanese multinational corporate, and the different ways in which things get done. And, you know, Hitachi accomplished a lot, no criticism of the way they do things, but how things are done in ETH2 world or Ethereum world is very different, very bottom up. It is a lot of cat herding. We have the Ethereum cat herders, and We're reliant a lot on people coming up with new ideas, coming into the ecosystem, bringing ideas, taking leadership without necessarily having leadership conferred on them. And there isn't the sort of hierarchical top-down structure. You know, Vitalik will come up with some ideas and he'll throw them out there, and then it's up to people to pick them up or not pick them up, and things like that. So it's the cathedral and the bazaar model, which I've written about a few times. This is Eric Raymond's kind of classic essay on open source development, and we're fully in the bazaar, and it's noisy and it's chaotic, but yet somehow really incredible work emerges from it as it becomes ordered, and order emerges from chaos. So yeah, it's fair to say that the next generation of Ethereum, the future of Ethereum roadmap, has had a few pivots over the last couple of years, partly because new technologies and new things come to light. So two things which kind of deflected us from the older roadmap. So we had a phase zero, phase one, phase two roadmap where we would deliver the Beacon chain, which we did, and then we would deliver data sharding, and then we would deliver executable shards, execution environments. And after that, we would turn off proof of work and migrate Ethereum 1 over to Ethereum 2, a sort of multi-year project. This got truncated, so we delivered phase zero, and now we're doing proof of stake straight away. This is the next thing we're doing. And after that, we're doing data shards, and then we're sort of basically have delivered the roadmap. And a couple of things changed that. One was the emergence of rollups as a technology, layer two technology on Ethereum. So they give us a lot of what executable shards would have given us. They take out of the protocol layer the management of state and the management of execution. They just rely on the protocol for data. So the on-chain, you have the data. Off-chain, you have the execution and the state management. And that solves a lot of problems for Ethereum. We can store data on-chain okay, especially when we've got lots of shards. It was the state management and the execution that were expensive. So this roll-up ecosystem that's emerging, makes a lot of important parts somebody else's problem, which is nice from a protocol developer's point of view. We can simplify the base protocol, and then it facilitates an ecosystem where people can run many, many experiments and you can have many different types of roll-ups, and some will succeed, some will fail. And you can try and iterate many different solutions, just stuff we cannot do at the protocol layer. We have to be really, really conservative at the protocol level. It's impossible to break anything. We mustn't do it. So that's been a big breakthrough. The other one was my colleague in consensus R&D, Mikhail Kalinin, just envisioned what we're calling the merge now, which is we take the Ethereum proof of work engine, so the ETH1 clients that everyone's familiar with, like Geth or Besu, and we basically just turn off proof of work in them and plug in proof of stake. We already have proof of stake running in the form of the Beacon chain, and Mikhail envisaged a very straightforward way to do this, and so this has become the plan. And the pressures were on, right? I mean, the narrative around proof of work is getting increasingly sort of toxic. This thing about NFTs are destroying the planet and burning down the rainforests and things. And it's about time we deliver proof of stake. It's been too long.
Absolutely. And just to kind of go into some more details as well about those two specific areas, like the roll-ups versus the shards, for instance, you have a number of different networks that have been emerging, what's more broadly being described as these layer two networks for Ethereum, you know, Polygon being the most popular one, but there being a number of others. Where I think it's In your mind, and certainly you hear Vitalik mention this too, I think it's zero knowledge roll-ups are kind of the preferred technology for scaling. But is it fair to say they're not quite at a point yet where they're readily available? And so hence a lot of the layer two technologies that exist right now aren't quite fulfilling that more utopian vision of where it's going to get to, but we're not too far off.
Yeah, I have a a kind of layperson's knowledge of this stuff, because as I mentioned earlier, I've had to focus and roll up some of the things which are sort of adjacent to what I focus on, but not core. Though I think I have some intuition for how it goes. And there are basically two paradigms, one of which is called optimistic roll-ups. They rely on something called called fraud proofs to remain secure, so anyone can challenge the execution on the chain. If the roll-up operator does something which is incorrect, then you can challenge that with a fraud proof, and there's a sort of crypto economic mechanism to reward correct fraud proofs and punish, you know, bad ones and so on, and punish bad operators. ZK rollups have a sort of validity proof thing going on, whereby they post proofs to the chain that they acted correctly, and the proofs are very easy to verify. And this is a much smoother, a much more effective way to operate. With the optimistic rollups, there are things like you can have a week-long withdrawal delay if you want to get your funds out, your NFTs out, to give people the opportunity to generate the fraud proofs and make sure they can get on chain without being censored. Whereas the ZK rollups that don't have this issue. As you alluded to, this zero knowledge cryptography, and it's not the ZK part that's actually used, it's the succinct part of it, but that's getting a bit technical. This cryptography is very new. It's really being built in the last couple of years and is developing, you know, just super fast. There's this Cambrian explosion of different techniques to apply it. And yeah, it's far from being mature yet. The EVM, which is Ethereum's virtual machine, the engine that runs stuff, is not designed to play nicely with zero knowledge proofs and the SNARKs and the STARKs, which we have. So, you know, if you want to compile your Solidity program and run it on a ZK rollup, this has a lot of complexity and overhead behind the scenes, and people are working on that. And there are domain-specific languages like, you know, Cairo and Zinc, which allow you to write directly in kind of zero-knowledge specific languages. But this is all so new, Connor, and is really rapidly evolving. It's hard to know quite where we are or where we're going to be in a year's time. But from a technical point of view, the ZK stuff has the most promise. It's the most scalable, and it's the most efficient of the technologies out there, as far as I can see.
And then when we talk about the convergence with the merge with the ETH1 and ETH2 clients, how will that kind of pan out longer term? Because nearer term, you have your various different clients, Taiku and Beisu, say in Consensus's case for proof of stake and proof of work networks. I'm trying to avoid using the ETH1, ETH2.
You don't have to worry about that with me, Connor. I'm okay. Wedded to, I publish what's new in ETH2. I mean, you know, I own the website ETH2.news. I mean, you know, this is, I'm fighting to preserve this technology. Okay. It's a terminology.
Do you think that there'll be, it will make sense for, you know, longer term, these kind of the clients to merge into one? Because coming at it from a very simplistic and, you know, probably naive perspective, it's, yeah, ultimately it's like the Consensus mechanism that's being, you know, replaced with the merge. And you know, is that too simplistic of a view of this, or do you think that's feasible longer term?
Yeah, it's definitely feasible, and it's something we're thinking about in Pegasus. So the initial design is you can choose any of the available ETH1 clients, as in execution clients. So that might be Geth or Beisu or Nethermind or Aragon. And you can pair it with any of the available ETH2 clients or Consensus clients, which is, you know, Teku, Prism, or Lighthouse or Nimbus. Currently, Lodestar is doing good. And they can combined act as the joint Ethereum 2 client. So they're well encapsulated. We've defined an API by which they speak to each other. But of course, you're getting two components from different sources. They've got different stacks. They've got different documentation, different metrics, different logging, everything. So we're in the happy position in Consensus of having both an ETH1 and an ETH2 client. So we have Besu and Teku. They're both Java. They're both Apache 2. And so we're exploring what it might look like to not exactly unify, but perhaps bring them closer together so that if you want to run an Ethereum 2 client or a future Ethereum client post-merge, you can just deploy this one thing and it's all in one package with consistent documentation and consistent metrics, and it's all there. With Teku, our target users are primarily institutional, the professionals. The power users who are hosting thousands of stakes. That's our sort of user persona as we plan our product strategy. And so thinking through from their point of view, they can dual source their stuff. They can take Geth and Prism and run them together. But if it goes wrong, then who do they go to? Who do they shout at? Who do they point the finger at? This is always a classic issue in sort of purchasing, having accountability for the thing. So we're thinking we might not get much technical advantage from combining the two clients, but there might be a nice point where you've just got a single source. And so if it goes wrong, you can just come to Pegasus, we'll fix it. You don't have to worry about which bit's gone wrong. And stuff like that. So I think there's not so much technical advantage, but I think there's some nice usability and marketing advantages to sort of combining the two. So we're definitely looking at it, but it's not going to be for a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And so going a bit further into the whole topic of the merge, you've just got back from Greece recently.
Oh yeah, you can tell by the tan. Yeah. we spent 16 hours a day in a windowless basement, which was a shame. But we got basically dev teams from most of the clients, ETH1 and ETH2 side, and from the Ethereum Foundation and a couple of Consensus R&D teams. We all got together in an undisclosed location in Greece and spent the week basically building a merge testnet. So what this means is getting the ETH1 clients represented there and the ETH2 clients in all the combinations I previously mentioned, working on a single testnet and running Ethereum on proof of stake or simulated proof of stake. It's the first time we'd done anything quite at that scale. We'd had a sort of hackathon earlier in the year where we'd done an early version of this, but this was a huge leap forward. And we reckon we saved about 3 months of remote work by getting together in one place. And after 2 years of not leaving my house, it was kind of nice to get together with people again. Yeah, I hadn't flown anywhere for 2 years, which is unheard of in the last like 25 years. So that was kind of weird. Yeah. Yeah. So it was a great success. We set some milestones, fairly easy ones. Just, first milestone, pass all the spec tests. Second milestone, run your client with one other client. So if you're running an ETH2 client, run it with one of the ETH1 clients. And vice versa. And then milestone three is kind of run combinations. So you've got multiple clients on the same network. And then I can't remember four, but five was run a testnet with basically all possible combinations and keep it running for several days. So we did that. And it was great, really good experience.
And previously, of course, there's been times where client teams have got together, but I think presumably it's the scale though of it this time around was different because you had both ETH1 and ETH2 as well as some researchers around it. So correct me if I'm wrong, but previously it was more you'd have ETH2 focus teams working together, say. And
yeah, these things have been developed pretty much in parallel. So the Beacon chain and these sort of ETH2 plans have until quite recently been done quite distant from the historic Ethereum network stuff. So until a couple of months ago, this Ethereum 2 or Ethereum on proof of stake just hadn't even been discussed at the regular all core devs call. And we we started this Beacon chain almost a year ago, now running proof of stake and so on, but it is in parallel to the main Ethereum network. And the two sides, you know, the traditional Ethereum 1 developers and ETH 2 people really didn't have much point of contact. That's all changed. And this workshop we did was the sort of tangible, the practical evidence of the change. But we're also getting the proof of stake, the merge discussed on recent all core devs calls. And now everyone has agreed from all the client teams, ETH 1, ETH 2, this is the next thing we're doing. We're not going to do any other upgrades to Ethereum before we deliver this merge, this proof of stake Ethereum.
And in terms of the question that everyone's asking is around when that's going to happen. And previously, as in, you know, I think 6 months ago or so, the speculation was towards year end this year, maybe Q1 next year. Is there a sort of, you know, feeling from the community on that at the moment?
Within this year was always over optimistic. Yeah, timing is very slippery in this space, Connor, and I'm very hesitant to say anything definite just because nobody is in control of it, right? And if everything goes perfectly smoothly, and yeah, there are no hitches and all the governance is happy and there's nobody in the community, say, you know, waving a red flag, then you know, maybe towards end of Q1, beginning of Q2, but realistically, it never goes as smoothly as you hope. And we are a community of optimists. We wouldn't be doing this. We wouldn't be aiming to change the world if we weren't optimists. Sometimes kind of feeds over into our timing estimates. So I'm hesitant to put a definite date on it, but I would be extremely disappointed if we didn't deliver in 2022. And I'd be a bit disappointed if we didn't deliver in the first half of 22. So that's pretty much as specific as I'm prepared to get.
Yeah. No, It's certainly exciting times, and especially seeing the two communities really working together. And like you say, there's not going to be any other big changes until this happens. Yeah, and no doubt that's going to incentivize a lot of people to make it happen in as timely and but safe manner as possible. So say if you know, we catch up again you know, a year from now and the merge has happened, I mean, what's next? What's going to be next for you? Are you going to be, you know, deep looking at sharding, or are you going to be starting to switch your focus somewhere else? Because you've been so focused on this for so long now.
Oh, personally, I mean, yeah, the ETH2 effort rolls on. I mean, so there are plans to do a post-merge cleanup, which will enable withdrawals. So currently you put down a stake, you don't know when you're going to get it back. We haven't, you know, nobody can actually take their earnings out of the Beacon chain yet. So we need to enable that. That'll come a few months after the merge. Then sharding is the next big thing, which gives massive scalability. And then there's a whole bunch of other exciting stuff. So, you know, there's a whole career to be had being involved in that. We'll see how it goes. I've got no particular expectation. There's a certain amount of internal encouragement within Consensus to sort of pick up again the sort of management corporate side of things. You know, I've got 20 years of it under my belt. So getting involved in the more sort of corporate level stuff, especially as Consensus is becoming looking more like a traditional software company, is attracting some serious investment and, you know, is becoming a big player. Honestly speaking, between you and me, I hope nobody's listening. I'm not overly excited by that. So I'm, you know, lesson learned. The techie stuff is where my heart is. So I'll probably find something like that to fill my time.
But it's also like a, I think, a classic problem in terms of as career technologists, so to speak, you know, with regards to being able to remain hands on, but also grow within organizations. I think that you almost see this classic thing where if someone starts off as a developer, they become a mid-level developer, senior developer, then maybe a lead developer, and then it's management and management and management and management. And, it, you know, if you're very lucky, you end up in a place where you have that. And I remember working for an investment bank a number of years ago. We were in a fortunate position for a time where we had managing directors who were still coding, but that was, you know, really an exception to the norm. As you say, though, there's so many people, you know, like yourselves, like people who, you know, work in my company as well, who really want to stay very hands on. But you do feel a lot of the time that organizations, as they grow, they often, you know, have that classic problem where the opportunity to continue to be hands on. And this isn't, reflecting it on Consensus, but it's just more, you know, an observation about the technology industry more generally. And so I think it's really important that we can find ways to champion, you know, people to have, you know, careers like you're doing now, where you've come in and you've got all of this significant experience, but also very, you know, significant breadth of technological experience. And you want to see people have. I think it's important for the technology community to have more people to look up to like that.
Mm. Yeah, it's a classic dilemma, isn't it? And, you know, I don't have any great answers. I'm very thankful for Consensus, you know, facilitating me over the last few years. Largely, I've, you know, carved out my own path and have been allowed to do so, which has been terrific. I don't think in more traditional organizations, you don't necessarily get the opportunity to do that. There's been a huge amount of support and, you know, I think other people are finding that as well. We have a high degree of autonomy within the company. And yeah, I've learned to really value that. I don't have answers to the questions of what do you do with elderly technologists. What I am convinced is that people are most productive about when they are excited about what they work on. And, you know, I tried to get excited about management stuff, making PowerPoints and things, but ultimately it didn't, it didn't get me out of bed in the morning. Whereas, things that I do now motivate me enormously.
Yeah, and you can completely see that when it's moving at, you know, such a rate. And as you mentioned earlier on, the whole ecosystem has grown so much in the last while. And on reflection as well, do you think that, you know, what's happening right now in terms of blockchain, if we were going back probably really the last 5 years of activity, and we know that, you know, for the next 5 to 10, it's going to be, you know, equally as transformative. People certainly have parallels with the growth of blockchain adoption, right? It's growing at double the rate that the internet grew at in terms of, you know, user adoption. But do you feel that there were other moments kind of in the last, say, 20, 30 years where you think there's been other, you know, many other pivotal technologies beyond the internet and, you know, crypto and blockchain? Or do you think it's kind of, you know, because I often hear people talk about how, you know, this is like a once in a generation thing that's happening right now. I'd love to hear what you think on that statement.
Yeah, it does feel like it, doesn't it? I mean, I sat on the sidelines during the .com boom. I was working at Hitachi at the time, and my colleagues were all off joining crazy startups and having, you know, the time of their life. And I was very risk averse and watched it all happen from the sidelines. And part of my thinking was, when this blockchain thing started to look like a paradigm shift, I don't want to miss out again. This is my last chance. I'm not going to sit and watch it all happen. Nobody died during the .com boom. Everyone survived. They all, you know, they might have had a wild ride, but everyone was fine. So risk is low, just dive in. I don't know about other technologies, you know, AI, machine learning, things like this are quietly changing the world. The mobile devices, the whole thing, just inconceivable when I kind of started my career that, you know, I could wander around with the world in my hands, access to the world's information, do video calls on my phone, you know, just astonishing. And these kind of revolutions are happening all the time around us. But I don't know what it is about blockchain that feels like a paradigm shift. This sort of Web3 narrative is really interesting. The internet of value rather than the internet of information, you know, lots of sort of memes around that. And Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how it shakes out. And in 5 years, 10 years time, what impact will we have actually made on the world? You know, there's a lot of noise and hype at the moment, but seeing what actually lands is going to be really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other question on that: if you weren't working in protocols, which area do you think would interest you most or captivates you most?
Within blockchain stuff.
Yeah.
So I initially interviewed for Consensus Diligence to be a smart contract auditor. Pegasus grabbed me, which was fine. And I don't know whether I would have been a good auditor or not, but I do love that level of detail. And the way I like to understand things and how I kind of ended up doing what I'm doing now is I understand stuff from the bottom up. You know, I need to know about the bits and the bytes, about the machine code and the executions and the packets on the wire and build up from there. I'm not a person who can look at an app and then dissect it and go down the stack. And that's why I have I have trouble with kind of modern computer science where, you know, they graduate and they don't even know what hexadecimal is. And I'm like, really? That lends itself to the protocol work that I'm doing now and also to the kind of smart contract auditing side, because it's very, very detailed oriented. You really have to know what's going on under the hood. You can't make any assumptions. So yeah, that I don't think I would be a DeFi degen or NFT artist or any of that, but that would have been a decent path as well.
Either way, you'd be one of the key people making sure it all works and is secure. So it's certainly a very, very important place in those worlds. So if people want to kind of connect with you and keep up with what you're doing, of course, you've got the ETH2 News. But what's the best way for people to reach out or find you?
Yeah, ETH2.news. So I write every 2 weeks on what's new in ETH2. That's the title. So it's just a roundup of what's going on. Most fairly technical, but occasionally I let an opinion hang loose in there. And I've been doing that for 3 years or so. You can find me on Twitter. I am Benjaminian_XYZ. Don't ask. And Twitter's a decent place to contact me if anyone wants to get in touch.
Well, wonderful. Well, Ben, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you here today. I look forward to catching up again soon.
Yeah, great fun talking, Connor. I mean, there's so much that we could cover, but appreciate it. Thank you for considering me an innovator. I'm proud to join the ranks of the others that you've spoken to and humbled as well. But good conversation. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.